Well, I'm glad you're here today. You know, when break week comes in Henry County and everyone kind of takes off, it's one of those questionable times because I always wonder, well, I wonder what Sunday's going to look like. But you're here, and I'm glad you're here. It's a great day. I can't wait to spend some time in God's Word. And to be honest with you, you guys sang loud today. I don't know if we just have the singers that are left and everyone else went out of town. I don't know. Is that the announcement that we made last week? But gosh, you guys were knocking it out today. It's great to worship, isn't it? And just to celebrate all that we have in Jesus. Well, today we're going to continue in our series. I want you to turn to two passages, Colossians chapter 3, find Colossians chapter 3, and Matthew chapter 6. Okay, we're going to gospel and an epistle, the letter of Paul and the words of Jesus, Matthew chapter 6 and Colossians chapter 3. Colossians chapter 3 has kind of been the launching pad, so to speak, for what we've been talking about over the last several weeks. And the challenge has been to live above the line. I mean, to live above the line. And this is not just a catchy phrase. It's not just a neat way to describe the Christian life. And it's certainly not just a mental image or a picture of what it means to live in Jesus. It is the call to the church, to those who are believers, those that know Jesus. And so I'm really speaking to believers today. I'm speaking to those who know Jesus and are following him. And this call is to believers. And you'll see that in the Colossian passage. And so if you found your place there, look in verse 1, Colossians 3, verse 1 and 2. Paul writes, "If then you have been raised with Christ, seek the things that are above, where Christ is seated at the right hand of God. Set your minds on things that are above, not on things on the earth. For you have died, and your life is hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is your life, appears, then you also will appear with him in glory." I mean, those are some great, insightful words and some great challenges listed there. And we learned some things about that passage. In fact, five things that are very important. The word "if" that starts off that first verse really could be translated "since." Since then, you have been raised with Christ. You are a believer. You know Jesus. Your life is changed by him. Since you have been raised with Christ, seek things that are above. Set your mind on things that are above. And those are two powerful words as well. In fact, when you put those together, "since," "seek," and "set," I mean, it is a powerful combination. He is not telling us that we are to kind of give him a little bit of our life or give him a little bit of our attention, or you know what, we need to go to church on Sunday or need a Bible study on Tuesday night just so we can get a little bit of God in our life. He's saying that with all of our heart, with all of our attention, since we are believers, we are to seek him, and like with everything, like it's the most important thing in life, and then we're to set our minds on him. In other words, that's a definite, that's a gaze, that's to keep your focus on him. It's not a glance, it's not just a little bit of attention, it's everything is focused on God, on things that are eternal. And so that's the challenge. The second thing we learned is this, that living life above the line is very difficult. One, because there are so many demands below the line. Below the line, things that are temporal things. If here's the line. I mean, everything below the line that we have to do. You know, going to work, paying the bills, you know, mowing the grass, making the beds. I mean, all the things that we have to do every day, there are so many demands below the line that it is difficult, and we acknowledge that while we're living in this world, to keep our lives above the line. And also, because Satan is constantly tempting us and trying us. There are trials in this life and there are temptations in this life that just as soon as we think we've got everything set and we're above the line and we're doing exactly what God called us to do, man, you just get drug right back below the line and we have to start all over again. It's difficult. It's challenging, but it does not mean it's impossible. With God, we can live above the line, a life that honors and pleases him. Number three, above means eternal. Those things that are above the line, those things that are eternal, that last forever. And below the line are temporal things, those things that just don't matter. They won't last even this lifetime, much less eternal. Number four, above the line things are things that matter most. I mean, those are the things that matter most. Below the line things, things that matter least. And that's still, to be honest with you, where we spend most of our time, energy, passion, and money. And number five is this, above the line living will affect every area of your life. It is not a segmented thing. It's not say, you know what, I'm going to take this part of my life and put it above the line. I'm going to keep this part of my life below the line. I'm going to put this part of my life above the line, this part of my life below the line. No, it affects every part of your living. And so what we started doing is we started talking about different areas of our life that are affected by this whole idea that we're going to live above the line. And we talked first about worship. And what we learned was this, that worship is not what you do on Sunday. Worship is life. That every day, every part of your life, even the mundane routine things in life, you offer your life, your day, every task on the list to God as worship. When you get up on Monday, it's worship, man. I'm going to work. I'm going to honor God in my work. When you're at home with your family, man, it's worship. I'm going to honor God the way I live with my family. When I show up for church on Sunday, this is worship, and I'm going to honor God with my worship and with how I learn from Him and how I love on Him through praise. Everything in my life becomes worship. And then when you're living above the line, we talked about discipleship or discipling. And what we said was, you know, it goes beyond where we normally stop. You see, what we normally do is when we come to worship or a time of meeting together and teaching, we want to learn. We want to grow. And man, it's always good to learn and grow. I think it's one of the most exciting parts of life is learning and growing. But that's not where it stops for us. We don't study God's Word so that we can learn and grow and become spiritually big heads. We know the Scripture, and I know I've got my passages memorized. No, I'm doing all that so the end result is I'm a disciple making a disciple. I'm going out of here to impact the world with the gospel of Jesus, and I want somebody else to know the Jesus that I know, and I want them to grow in Him and become mature in Him, and then that disciple to make another disciple, and that disciple to make another disciple. And so now discipleship is not just something that I do so that I can grow. It's something that I do so that I can help others come to know Jesus and grow in Him. And it can continue and continue and continue. To be honest with you, for all of us, that's the only way any of us came to know Jesus. Somebody, a disciple of Jesus, told us about Jesus, and we came to know Jesus, and now we're to be disciples telling others about Jesus. That's the Great Commission. That's the challenge. Now, today we're going to talk about something that is a little more sensitive to the touch, and it is this thing called investing or investment. And you say, well, Pastor, is that just another way to talk about money? Yes, it is. Because the moment a pastor mentions money, everyone starts getting a little nervous. And so let's talk about investing. And let's talk about investments. Now, I know that we're in a very sensitive time in our economy. It's been a challenge for people. And a lot of people that have not experienced economic personal difficulties in their adult life have experienced those over the last several years, and so it's become a real challenge. And so you may say, well, you know, it's not really a good time. You don't need to be talking about money and finances and investing right in the middle of a recession or a depression for some people. But the truth is, in moments of adversity, when we're directing so much attention on economic issues, it is a great time to learn God's principles for living so that when we have little, we start living by His principles so that when we have much, we continue to live by His principles. I mean, it's just a common sense kind of lesson today, and I think it's important because it changes everything again for us because we start living above the line even with our finances. And by the way, in the New Testament, there are some powerful, pointed passages of Scripture that talk about this whole idea of investing. Let me read one of them to you from the Apostle Paul. He's writing to Timothy in 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 17 through 19. Listen to these words. I mean, these are some of those words that just kind of punch you right in the face. Listen to what he says. As for the rich in this present age, and to be honest with you, we all fall into that category because we have more in this country, most of us, all of us, than most people in the world live on. It's amazing. And so when you read this, don't think about, okay, oh, the guy down the street. That's who he's talking about. He's talking to you. He's talking to me. As for the rich in this present age, charge them not to be haughty, pride-filled, self-centered, get it? Nor to set their hopes on the uncertainty of riches, but on God, who richly provides us with everything to enjoy. And then he says, they are to do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous and ready to share, thus storing up treasure for themselves as a good foundation for the future, that they may take hold of that which is truly life. And so what he's saying is, you know what? In the area of your financial life, in the area of investing, until you're pouring the resources that God has entrusted to you in eternity, you don't even know what living's like. I mean, this is the life that's truly life when you start living like that. And so that's the words of the Apostle Paul. And you say, well, that's really not enough for me. I need more. Well, good. I'm glad you said that because I got more for you, all right? The words of Jesus. In fact, in the Gospels, over 15% of what Jesus said had reference to our money and our finances. And let me just read some of them. You just write down the references, okay? Because you're not going to be able to write all these verses down, but I just want you to write the references down. You go back and do Bible study on them yourself. Mark chapter 10, verse 21, rich young ruler. Remember these words? Jesus, looking at him, loved him and said to him, "You lack one thing. Go, sell all that you have, give it to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven. And come follow me." Now, why did Jesus say that to him? Because you know what? Jesus knew the rich young ruler loved his riches so much that there was no way that he would love him. And the only way for him to love him is for him to get rid of everything that he had and abandon this life so that he could embrace the life to come. And so Jesus commanded, he gave him this command, go sell everything you got and then come follow me. And what happened? What happened? What did he do? It says he walked away filled with sorrow because he had much. Listen to this verse, Luke 12, 15. He said to them, "Take care, be on your guard against all covetousness, for one's life." Man, this is one of those things that needs to be on everybody's contacts or glasses. Just kind of inscribed right there. One's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions. Man, awesome. This is what Jesus said now. Luke 12, 20 and 21. You remember the guy building bigger barns? Remember what he told him? Down in verse 20. "You fool, this night your soul is required of you, and the things you have prepared, whose will they be? So is the one who lays up for treasure for himself and is not rich toward God." I mean, what a summary. Luke 12, 33. "Sell your possessions and give to the needy. Provide yourselves with money bags that do not grow old, with a treasure in the heavens that does not fail, where no thief approaches and no moth destroys." Luke 14, 33. "So therefore, any one of you who does not renounce all that he has cannot be my disciple." I mean, harsh, strong words. Luke 18, 25. "For it is easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich person to enter the kingdom of God." Luke 21, verse 1 through 4. This is an awesome story. Jesus is watching everyone come bring offerings, and he says this. He looked up, he saw the rich putting their gifts in the offering box. He saw a poor widow put in two small copper coins, and he said, "Truly I tell you, this poor widow has put in more than all of them, for they all contributed out of their abundance, but she, out of her poverty, put in all that she had to live on." She put in everything she had. It may not have amounted to much in the eyes of men, but in the eyes of God, she gave more than them all. Matthew 6:33, you've heard this verse before. In fact, it is the summary of what we're going to study today. "Seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you." Matthew 13:44, "The kingdom of heaven is like a treasure hidden in a field, which a man found, and then he covered up. Then in his joy, he goes and sells all that he has, and he buys that field." I mean, those are just a sample of the words of Jesus talking about where we live. And I'll tell you what he's saying. He's saying for most people, life below the line in the area of finances is a common thing. This is where most of us live. And he's saying, don't live below the line. Maybe the most powerful passage is found in Matthew chapter 6. And so if you've marked that, go ahead and turn back there. Matthew chapter 6, verse 19. He puts it this way. Again, these are the words of Jesus. Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. The eye is the lamp of the body. So if your eye is healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light in you is darkness, how great is the darkness? And then verse 24, he gives the application. No one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he'll be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money. Now I want to break this apart for you, just going to give you the three aspects of this passage. One, he gives us the instruction. He starts off in a negative way, in instructing us. And he says this, do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth. I mean, this is a command. This is not optional. He's saying, listen, do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth. And you know what? I said in the first service, but it's really true. If there could be one of those blinking danger signs right above verse 19 in everybody's Bible so that when you turn to this page, it's just blinking, danger, 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 warning, warning, warning. It would not be enough. Because Jesus is saying, do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth. I mean, there's a danger here. Why? Moth and rust destroy, thieves break in and steal. This stuff doesn't last. You're giving yourself to things that just don't last. They don't add up to anything. It might be moth, it might be rust, it might be a thief. It might even just be the wear and tear of life. But I tell you, this does not last. So do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth. But then it turns around. It turns around to a positive. He says, lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven. Now, I like that because, you know, most of us, when we read this passage, we remember the do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth. But we forget about the positive. In fact, the command and the instruction and the opportunity is with all of us. He says, you know what? You can lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven. You can do that. It's within the realm of possibility. That's why he tells us in this passage, lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven. Things can be different. You can invest your life, your resources in such a way that you impact eternity. And your eternity. You lay up treasures in heaven. Isn't that pretty incredible? It's mind-boggling to me. And when I think about that passage, I always jump to this passage. It's just been a favorite of mine. It's 1 Corinthians chapter 3. Paul's talking to this church in Corinth, and he's trying to give them instructions about being a believer, and that, you know, as a believer, you're building on the foundation of Jesus. And listen to what he writes in Colossians chapter 3, verse 10 through 15. You don't have to turn there. Just listen. He's writing to this group of believers. He's challenging them. And listen to what he tells them. According to the grace of God given to me, like a skilled master builder, I laid a foundation, and someone else is building upon it. And then he says this word of caution. Let each one take care how he builds upon it. For no one can lay a foundation other than the one which is laid, which is Jesus Christ. Now, if anyone builds on the foundation with gold, silver, precious stones, wood, hay, straw, each one's work will become manifest. For the day will disclose it because it will be revealed by fire, and the fire will test what sort of work each one has done. This is really cool. If the work that anyone has built on the foundation survives, he will receive a reward. If anyone's work is burnt up, he will suffer loss, though he himself will be saved, but only as through fire. Now, this is a great picture. It reminds us that, you know, we really don't have a choice about Matthew 6. Because 1 Corinthians 3 is happening in every believer's life. What he's telling us is, in every believer's life there is a foundation, and there is no other foundation but Jesus Christ. He's the one we're building on. He is the rock upon which we stand. He's the cornerstone. He is our foundation for life. Every single one of us are building on that foundation. And you build with two kinds of materials: gold, silver, precious stones, wood, hay, straw. You can just draw a line separating those two sets of three: gold, silver, precious stones, wood, hay, straw. He said, you know what? End of life, everyone's work's going to be made manifest, because it's going to go through the fire. It's going to go through fire. And you know what? If you're building below the line, if you're living below the line, you're building with wood, hay, and straw. It may look good. It may be a tall pile. But when it's put to the fire, it's all going to burn up. And what he says is you're going to suffer loss. But you'll be saved as through fire. Now, when I read those words, what I hear is this: if you live below the line as a believer and you're building with wood, hay, and straw, at the end of your life's going to be judged by God. And all of those works, all those things are going to be burnt up. The good news is you're going to make it to heaven. The bad news is you're going to smell like smoke. I mean, you're just going to get into heaven by the skin of your teeth. That's the way we say it in the South. You're saved as one who escapes through fire. The good news is you don't have to build with wood, hay, and straw. You can build with gold, silver, and precious stones. Works that last for eternity. That's living above the line. Now that's the instruction. Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth. Do lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven. Now here's the explanation. It's down in verse 22 and 23. You read this and you think, you know what? I think Matthew messed up, because this has nothing to do with finances. It's like he just messed up and he took some words of Jesus and put them in the wrong place, because he starts talking about eyes now. We were talking about money, and now we're talking about the eyes, the lamp of the body. So if your eye is healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body full of darkness. If then the light in you is darkness, how great is that darkness? You're like, what does that have to do with our finances? What does that have to do with laying up treasure? Take the analogy for what it is. Let's think about a lamp. He says the eye is the lamp of the body. What is the lamp for? A lamp's for giving light. You walk into a dark room, you turn on the lamp so that you can see and that you can successfully maneuver the room. You can live in light. But what if the lamp is bad? What if the lamp is bad and you walk into the dark room and you turn the switch and it doesn't come on? You're still in darkness. And he says, guess what? How great is that darkness? It's even greater, because I don't have another light. I don't have another way to see. That's my lamp. That's my light. It's bad. It's done. And now I'm going to live in darkness. I'm going to stumble around the darkness because my lamp is bad. Now, how does that apply to the eye? The eye is the lamp of the body. It gives us light. It helps us see. Helps us see. If we didn't have eyes, we could turn on all the lights we wanted to. We still couldn't see. Our eyes let us see. Now, what if your eye is bad? And it's interesting, he uses the singular here. What if your eye is bad? And what does he mean by being bad? Does he mean my eyes are bad because I got glasses on? Everybody that wears contacts and glasses, your eye is bad, so it applies. No. Listen to what he's telling us in this passage. He's talking about having two kinds of view. A view with one eye on heaven and one eye on earth. In the first part of this passage, by the time 22 and 23 roll around, he boils it down to a singular view, and he says, the eye, your eye is bad. You know what he's talking about? He's talking about in your same eye, you've got double vision. And your eye is trying to look at heaven and earth at the same time. It's painful to think about, isn't it? Let's just take a razor blade, slice our eye in half, half looking at earth, half looking at heaven, and guess what? You got a bad eye. And you're not going to see anything. And he says, you know what? How great is that darkness for you? It's great. Because you can't focus on anything. And you're going to lose at everything. That's the explanation. Now here's the application. It's in verse 21 and verse 24. He says, verse 21, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Verse 24, no one can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and money. Let me tell you two things about those two verses. Verse 21 is not a proposition. It's not a probability. He's not saying for where your treasure is, there your heart might be also, could be also, will eventually be also. He's saying, listen, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. He's not talking future tense here. He's talking present tense. He's saying, you know what? Right now, guarantee it, mark it down. Where your treasure is, your heart's going to be there. I love it when somebody said this a long time ago. Money does not make a man, does not break a man. It reveals a man. You look where you're putting your treasure, and I guarantee you that's where your heart is. Your heart's going to follow. That's why verse 24 makes so much sense. No one. Do you hear that? No one? There are no exceptions to this rule. These are the words of Jesus, by the way. And so don't sit to say, well, you know what, that may be true for some people, but I'm not that way. I can have treasure on earth and treasure in heaven. I can do it all myself. I don't have a problem with this. That's for immature people. No, he didn't say immature people. He said no one can serve two masters. For either he will hate the one and love the other, or he'll be devoted to the one and despise the other. And then he makes this application. You cannot serve God and money. And so in the first part of 24, he's not talking about in vague terms here. love the one, hate the other, devoted to the one, despise the other. You know, he's talking very specific terms. What's he talking about? He's talking about God and money. He's talking about himself. Jesus is saying, you know what? If you're laying up treasure on earth, it's not going to last. And you know what? Your heart's following it. That's where your heart is. So don't do that. Lay up treasure in heaven. Focus only on that. Pour your life into things that are eternal. Live above the line with your finances. You know one of the most dangerous things? You can't serve two masters. You can't live on both sides of the line. God, money. Because you're going to serve one and you're going to hate one. You're going to be devoted to one and you're going to despise one. You cannot serve God and money. That's powerful stuff. That's what Jesus said. Now, what do we draw from that? How do we know if we're living above the line in the area of investing finances? Number one, if you're living above the line, write these three things down. You are an investor over a consumer, and you just need to ask yourself that question. It's real easy to think about it. What do you focus on? With the resources that have been trusted to you, what do you focus on more? What you consume or what you're investing for eternity? If you're living above the line, the greatest interest in your life is investing, not consuming. Okay, real simple, isn't it? Number two, you are invested in eternal securities over personal security. And what I mean by that is, you know, the reason we explain away a lot of things that we invest in this world is because we say, well, you know, we got to have it. Personal security is our main concern. Whether it's with our insurance or our house or whatever, you know, we just want security. We want everything to be secure and safe. But if you really live in above the line, you're more interested in eternal securities, those things that will last forever, than you're interested in personal security. Third thing is this. Your values will be revealed by where you aim to accumulate treasure. Your values will be revealed by where you aim to accumulate treasure. And this is a good question to think about. Not just are you tithing and are you giving, but where are you aiming to accumulate treasure? Have you thought about your financial life that way? Where in your area of where are you aiming to accumulate treasure? Is it here? Or is it in heaven? Is it on earth below the line, or is it in heaven above the line? What are you aiming for? Most of us haven't even given that thought, that we're aiming to accumulate treasure in heaven. Remember now, these are the words of Jesus. All right, he's telling us, do this. Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth. Do lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven. What are you aiming for? Now, read a little book called The Treasure Principle by a guy named Randy Alcorn. And the treasure principle was this. You can't take it with you, but you can send it on ahead. Okay, talking about money. You can't take it with you, but you can send it on ahead. And you know what? A lot of us try to take it with us. A lot of us try to take it with us. I remember years ago, I had one of those Saturdays where I had two funerals. And the first one was a real tragic, it was a real heartbreaking situation. All of them are difficult, but this was, I don't remember the circumstances, but I just remember it was very, very difficult and very heartbreaking. And so after the first funeral, I was exhausted. I mean, I was emotionally spent. And so I had to get in the car, drive right over to the next funeral, and got there. They were having like a viewing beforehand, and then the funeral, and I got there late for the viewing, so I got just before the funeral. You know, I get there, and one of our staff members had driven me over there. Get to the funeral home, walk in the funeral home, and I get up to the casket to spend time with the family, and this gentleman is being buried with his golf clubs. Okay, this is a true story. First for me, though. I'd never had that happen before. I look in there, and there he is. I'm like, what in the world is going on? I mean, what's happening here? And so I asked him, I said, hey, what's the deal with the golf clubs, man? He said, well, you know, he loved golf and played all the time. And we know there's got to be golf in heaven, and so we're just sending his clubs with him. Think about that for a minute, okay? Think about that. Just not going to work, all right? Just to let y'all know, in case you're thinking about that, don't do it. Not going to work, all right? We could be real critical of him, couldn't we? I mean, it'd be easy. You got to be kidding me. Golf? Out of all the things you want to take with you, you want to take your golf clubs? I mean, you got to be kidding. That's what you love most in life is golf? Well, let me ask you a question. If we're not aiming to lay up for ourselves treasures in heaven, if that's not been our aim, that hasn't been our thought, then there's got to be something in this world that we love more than heaven, more than Jesus. So all of us, figuratively, in some way, are putting stuff in the casket with us. We're throwing stuff in the casket. It may not be our golf clubs. You throw those in the lake. But there's something else you're putting in the casket because there's stuff we love. If we in our minds have not even given thought to laying up treasures in heaven, we haven't given that thought. We don't sit down with our checkbook and our budget and say, how am I going to lay up treasures in heaven? Then you know what? Then we're putting some stuff in our casket with us. And you cannot take it with you, but you can send it on ahead. Now, how do you do that? Let me give you the six things he listed that are very, very good. Number one, you've got to understand God owns everything. God owns everything, and I'm his money manager. Okay? And I like this thing he's put in his little sub-statement here that distinguishes how God's given us stuff. He says, God has not given us anything. He's entrusted it to us. In other words, he still owns it. All the stuff that you and I have, it really does not belong to you and me. It really belongs to him. And we're really the managers of that. Everything that we have. Number two, my heart always goes where I put God's money. You want to see where your heart is, just look where you spend your money. Number three, heaven, not earth, is my home. Heaven, not earth, is my home. That's just real simple, isn't it? But we really get used to living down here, don't we? I mean, have you ever said, well, I want to go to heaven, just not right now? You ever said that? And people, when we try to be real noble about that, I just want to be here for my kids. I just want to be here, you know, for my grandkids. I just want to be here so they'll, you know, listen. Disguise that with nobility all you want to. It's pure selfishness because you just want to be here because you like it. This is pretty good. I want to go to heaven, just don't want to go right now. Somehow we all need to get where the Apostle Paul was in Philippians chapter 1 where he says, listen, it is far better for me to depart and be with Christ. We need to realize that heaven is our home, not earth. Number four, I should not live for the dot, but for the line. You remember that whole illustration? No matter how old you are, your life on earth and the time you spend here could be represented by the head of a pencil or a pen, just a dot. I mentioned it to you last week, Francis Stats, 103 years old, the oldest person I've ever known. You can live to be 103. It's still just a dot. But we need to live for the line. That is, you take a pen and begin drawing a line, walk all the way around the globe, attach it back to itself, and you have eternity. That's what you need to live for. You need to live for the line, not for the dot. Number five, giving is the only antidote to materialism. Giving is the only added antidote to materialism. And why is that? Because it dethrones me and it exalts him. And number six, I love this. God prospers me not to raise my standard of living, but to raise my standard of giving. Do you get that? You know, that's the big part a lot of times when you hear the prosperity gospel being preached, that they leave out. God didn't prosper you so that you can increase your standard of living, but that you can increase your standard of giving. I learned that in a lot of ways. When I was young growing up, my dad, an accountant, my mom was a nurse, but godly people, they taught me when I would get an allowance, I would tithe. We used to get church envelopes and boxes in Sunday school, and it would have been to worship, went to Sunday school, went to Wednesday night, you know, all those little checks, and one of them was, did you give? Did you tithe? Well, I did. And my dad made it clear when I was young, I didn't give out a joyful heart. It was because I didn't get my allowance if I wasn't going to tithe. It would stop coming, you know. And then I got to be a teenager, and I got my first job. My first job was a paper route, where I delivered papers. And I would, you know, get up in the mornings on the weekends and load the papers in these two big bags, get on my bike, and deliver those all through the neighborhood, 300-something papers. And I remember the money I was making. I was thinking, man, I'm rich. This is so cool, you know. My dad would always make sure, all right, what'd you make? This is what you're going to give back. You can give back to God. I didn't give because I wanted to. I gave because he told me I had to. Same thing when I got to be a teenager and got another job, and even another job. And then when I got out on my own as an adult, I was doing that because I knew that was what I was supposed to do. But I soon learned it wasn't just an obligation. It was a privilege and a joy to give back to God. When I was a pastor in my first full-time church, it was a very small church, about 60 people, in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. I remember one Sunday, we had a couple visit our church, and I was telling somebody about this week. And it was a couple that looked different than we did. The husband was black, and the wife was white. They were in their 60s. In Baton Rouge, we had an all-white, very small church. And so when they came in, it was very noticeable that they were different. She had a British accent, too, which made it even, you know, a little stranger for people. And I remember that Monday night, I went to their house to visit them because they visited our church. And I got there and started talking to them, and everything looked pretty normal, you know, to me. I mean, they had a normal house just like we did. And we had normal conversation, had a great fellowship, talked to them about Jesus. They both had been saved, been married like 40 years. And, you know, just a phenomenal visit. When I was leaving to walk out to the car, LC was the man's name. He followed me to the car, and he said, "Hey, Pastor, I just want to let you know that we're going to join your church." And I said, "Man, that's great. We'd love to have you there." And he said, "I want you to know it's because how you've treated us. You haven't treated us any different." And I said, "Well, you know what? I just believe the song. Red and yellow, black and white, they are precious in his sight. I don't care what color you are. Every person, every man, woman, boy, and girl needs Jesus. And we ought to show them the love of Jesus. And so, man, we're glad to have you. It's so good to have you. And I'm thankful for that." He said, "Well, I want you to know something about me. This is not my house." I said, "This is not your house. And what are we doing here?" He said, "Well, this is just one of many houses that I own. And we're building a house over on the golf course right now. I'm a multimillionaire." And he said, "I'm not telling you that to brag. I'm just telling you that you can count on me. I'm going to be given." He said, "I tithe to the black church in our town. I don't want to go there, but I want to support them. And so I give 10% to them. I give 10% to Billy Graham every month. And I'll give 10%, at least 10% to my own church. And so you can count on me." And I thought, "You got to be kidding me." And that was phenomenal. That was more than our whole church gave. You know, I mean, it was like, you know, just him alone. It was phenomenal. And I remember a couple weeks later, he said, "You know, I want to teach you how to play golf." And I said, "Okay, many people have tried and failed. If you're up to the task, we will go." And so we went. And so if you've ever played golf with me, LC is the guy to blame for my golf game. But I can remember at one hole, we were talking about money, and he said, "You know," he was saying, "I don't know why, I don't know how the money I'm making, I'm actually making." He said, "I'm not that smart." I said, "I'm really not that smart. And I'd start out with a lot of money. I'd just start out with a little. But I determined that the more God gave me, I was going to give back to him. I was going to give more to him." And so he tried to give away 50% of his income every month. That was his goal. "I'm giving that away. I'm giving that to God's purposes." And so he said, "God just kept, he just keeps giving." He says, "I cannot give away enough. Every time I give something away, something else goes good and just keep making money." And I made one of those statements that, as a pastor, you wish you just never said. I said, "Wonder why God hadn't given me that kind of money." You know? And that was honest. I'm a pastor. I mean, come on, give me a break. You know? I'm not that smart either. Give me some money. You know what his response was? His response, this is a member talking to his pastor, and he'd only been a member 2 weeks, all right? And he stabs me right in the heart. And you know what he said? He said, "The reason God hasn't given you that money is because he knew he couldn't trust you with it." And I was like, "Oh." Okay. But his point is well made. His point is well made. God does not prosper us to raise our standard of living, but to raise our standard of giving. And you know what? There's nothing better in life than living above the line. Paul said it. He said, don't be haughty. Don't be filled with pride and self-centeredness. But you have much, give much. Be generous so that you can take hold of a life that's truly life, life above the line. And you know what? That's where we all need to live. Because that is how you lay up for yourself treasure in heaven.
Thanks for listening. For more information on Eagles Landing First Baptist Church, visit our website at www.eagleslanding.org or call our church office at 770-957-1355. Live for Jesus.